IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Access to credit enhances investments in productive sectors, leading to economic growth and employment. Limited or lack of access to credit makes it very hard to invest today and wait for returns in the future. The world as we know it runs on credit, and yet there are a large number of small and medium enterprises in our country which face this problem day in and day out. They are unable to make optimal business decisions and have to forego opportunities for growth and profitability. This problem is magnified 1,000 times over in rural India. I'm Sridhar Krishna, and I have my colleague Arushi Kataria with us today to talk about how access to credit can help generate jobs. Hello, Arushi.
Hi.
Do you agree that a greater access to credit will help generate more jobs?
I do actually believe in that because, I mean, we've always known that access to credit has a direct impact on corporate investment and economic growth in a country. However, the relationship between access to credit and unemployment has been less explored. But our hypothesis with this project has been that to create 20 million jobs in the economy, we need our GDP to grow at least 10%, and we need an employment elasticity of 0.5. And I do believe that access to credit and improving access to credit will play a crucial role in this. And I think more recent research that has gone into this has been done by Ayagri and his co-authors, where they found out that there is indeed a strong positive relationship between access to credit and job growth. They found that firms with greater access to credit exhibited 1-3% higher employment growth than those with no access. And this was extremely visible in MSMEs, which, you know, have been a part of the government's mandate to give lending to. So who do you think should, you know, who do you think these policies should target when we're talking about access to credit?
See, access to credit is, like you said, absolutely critical. And without access to credit, there would be no investment. There would be no GDP growth. But I think, like you said, I mean, it's only recently that there is a connection made, a clear connection, a statistical survey done, and an analysis done to determine that access to credit actually helps increase jobs. Because sometimes, intuitively, one might think that, you know, having more money would mean that businesses would invest in greater automation and therefore lead to fewer jobs. But the data does say otherwise, that access to credit does help generate more jobs. So that's absolutely fantastic. The other thing, I mean, answering your question about who do you think this is currently excluded from the financial system and needs greater support, right? I think large organizations have that access to credit. Large organizations also have a lot of collateral to offer to banks when they go out and seek credit. The problem happens when SMEs have, like, you know, big ambitions and see opportunities, and they struggle to get money in time to make those investments. So I think small and medium enterprises do generate a lot of jobs and should get preferential access to credit. But even large organizations can benefit from some preferential credit being linked to jobs being created. What if we had a system where, like, somebody got access to X amount of money more than what they're normally eligible for, but would get it if they generated more jobs? Then that would act as an incentive to generate jobs, right? So I think, like, you know, something like that could help. The other thing is about this whole rural-urban divide, which I've been reading about. And I think all of us know, as we live in India, there was a survey which found that in India, there's a largely cash economy, right? 72% of all transactions are in cash. But when you look at rural India, it's like only 16% or so of transactions happen digitally. So there are so many things like this which affect rural. So the rural India needs preferential access to credit. But even there, I think sometimes credit is given where grants would be the right approach. So now that we have JAM, right? You know what JAM is, Sarushi?
I haven't heard much about it. So yeah. If you could tell me, that'd be great.
So yeah, now that we have JAM, we need bread, right? So I think JAM is J stands for Jandal, A stands for Aadhaar, and M stands for mobile. So this triumvirate of these three can make a tremendous difference to our country. So I think you should look at these things and, like, you know, try and leverage them much more than we are doing today. So rural India can benefit from all this. And even amongst rural Indians, it has been found that credit given to women has a greater impact. So I would say those would be my priority sector lending, which is SMEs and rural women. Yeah, so tell me this. I mean, when we talked about this and I mentioned the priority sector lending, while we talk about financial inclusion, access to credit, we know that India has been doing something or the other with respect to financial inclusion from 1953. Morarji Desai did something in 1966. The Reserve Bank of India, after bank nationalization, etc., came up with some laws in 1972. All this led to some priority sector lending. What are your thoughts about priority sector lending and why that did not lead to the level of financial inclusion that is required?
So I think I was just going to tell you about that. But so the priority sector lending focuses, or at least right now focuses, on 8 identified sectors. And agriculture tends to be the largest, with, you know, about requiring about 18% of the banks putting out those kind of loans when they're giving them out under this scheme. However, banks have certain targets. They need to be profitable. They need to have lower number of NPAs. So do banks really then have an incentive to give out loans to people who they know nothing about? The chances are that people who are asking for loans under PSL are people who haven't been a part of the banking system at all. They have no credit history. The banks know nothing about them. And for the banks to invest this kind of money in them is very risky. They aren't sure that they're going to get this money back. And if they don't, then this becomes a part of their non-performing assets. And that's not something that they would like. So banks are just doing the bare minimum. They're probably giving out these loans to farmers that can actually pay them back, that have larger holdings. And the effect is not percolating to those who actually need these loans. And another part is also that banks, in their process of doing the bare minimum, even if these loans are going out to people who really deserve them, we have to understand that these people don't have a knowledge or a working knowledge of the financial system. They need to be assisted through it. They need to be provided assistance on how could they better manage their finances, how could they be successful using this loan. And that's not something that's being done in the priority sector lending right now. And that's what I think. But you raise an interesting point about, you know, prioritizing women creditors. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so Goldman Sachs came over to the very interesting report on giving credit. They called it giving credit where credit is due, right? I thought there was a very interesting play on words. But really what they said is investing in women and getting them into the workforce has the greatest benefit to the developing world especially. It can boost per capita income and GDP. And I remember talking to you a little while back, and you were talking to me about some research which showed that women-owned enterprises end up employing more people for dollar invested compared to enterprises owned by men. So I think that's another reason why I think we should look at women as the target segment for providing greater access to credit. Then when I look at... research has also shown, I mean, Goldman Sachs research says that, you know, women-owned SMEs face great barriers to entry and business growth. And this gap is as high as some $285 billion, right? That's an IFC report, which also says this, that 70% of women-owned SMEs are underserved, and the financing gap is to the tune of $285 billion in the developing world. But if these people were given, considering that they are, by and large, better credit risks than maybe even men, and then what do women do with the earnings that they get out of these enterprises, right? So women have been known to use these earnings more judiciously and buy goods and services that improve family welfare. And this creates a virtuous cycle, right? So according to this Goldman Sachs report, and I think I'm very sold on this idea that if India has and I think we talked about it in our previous podcast when we talked about women's labor force participation rate being so low in India. And one way of changing this could be if credit is given to women entrepreneurs. They set up businesses, they employ people, they build economic power, and their status in the home will improve. And also the labor force participation rate of women will go up. And this will add significantly to the GDP in ways that lending to men would. So if you had to prioritize, I mean, of course, everybody should have access to credit. But if you had to prioritize and if you had to choose, and I think it makes more sense to ensure that women who are facing lots of barriers to entry today are given the priority. That would be my take on this. The UNCTAD report also talks about, you know, financial inclusion, et cetera, and they do talk about it. And I think we'll get on to that in a little bit. But this is what I had to say about access to credit to women. Why don't we discuss more on this subject and the UNCTAD report? And also, you wanted to tell us about the RBI report on our policy on national, on financial inclusion. So I think let's do that after a short break. So welcome back. So let me, I was telling you briefly about the UNCTAD report just before the break. And the UNCTAD report talks about improving access to finance as a very important goal and says that inadequate access to finance remains a major obstacle for many aspiring entrepreneurs, especially in the developing world. And this can dramatically change things. It can provide jobs, it can provide employment, it provides it helps eliminate poverty. So I think it's an extremely important thing to ensure that there is greater financial inclusion and access to finance is improved significantly. They talk about creating a public credit guarantee scheme. So things which will ensure that these loans do get repaid. And in case they don't get repaid, then there is a guarantor, public guarantor of those loans. Because these are people who lack collateral. And especially if you're going to target women, we know that more than 90% of the world's wealth is held in the hands of men. And therefore, women have very little collateral to offer when it comes to accessing credit. And that also acts as a huge barrier for them. So if you can facilitate collateral-free loan screening mechanisms. Now, when you look at that and then provide FDI and financial services, supply chain finance and leasing and so on, these are all things that this UNCTAD report talks about. They're also talking about promoting funding for innovation. They say that, you know, we should attract venture capital investors and business angels to do this. Risk capital is very important to any budding entrepreneur. Very often, I know of businesses which were started with very little capital because when you start a business, you think that you're going to get your first customer in the first 2 months, then like you'll get 10 more and you'll get 100. And so you sort of make these big plans and then you go and borrow money. And very soon you find there's a delay in your product being developed. There's a delay in, like, you know, getting your first customer. And then there are some quality issues which crop up. All this is best served if you had some risk capital with you rather than all being debt. So I think that's another thing that they talk about. You know, when you talk about access to credit, I want it to be a broader term. And I want to think of even at-risk capital as something that's important while doing this. It also talks about performance-based loans and incentives. And I think that's pretty much what at-risk loans are, right? So basically, if you look at many countries around the world have financial models where they don't charge an interest, but instead take a stake in the business itself and get a percentage of the profits that are generated out of the money that is lent. So these are things that they talk about. They also talk about your favorite topic, Arushi. You talk about financial literacy training to entrepreneurs. And I think that's very critical because if you don't provide financial and accounting literacy training to budding entrepreneurs, these are people who probably haven't done very high levels of formal education, have not had much formal education beyond maybe schooling. And so they do need financial literacy as something which is there. We need to also expand the credit bureau that is there today. I mean, CIBIL does offer credit rating of individuals. If you have a good credit rating on CIBIL, then you have access to many other forms of your access to finance. Credit also goes up. So how can you expand the credit bureau's activities and public credit registry coverage? These are things that they sort of talk about as their objectives. And I think they're all very valid and very important to sort of focus on. So you were telling me about, when we were talking a little bit earlier, you also talked about this RBI report. You want to say something about that? And what does it say? I mean, does it offer some new solutions, new ideas? Because my brief reading of the RBI report seemed to indicate that, yes, we've been doing everything from 1953 and we're doing a lot and it's all sort of, it's bearing fruit. But I think they also talk about a few things which need to improve and change. So you want to tell us about that report?
Yeah. So I think one of the most interesting ideas to me was, you know, what they thought of as the financial inclusion triad, which includes financial inclusion policies that would bring people who aren't a part of, you know, the credit system into the system itself. The second being that there will be financial literacy initiatives. And financial literacy here doesn't just mean telling you that a bank exists, but telling you how to effectively use a bank account, how to save well, how to use your money well. And thirdly, customer grievance redressal, because we've often noticed that people who are having problems with the system are those who are least likely to be hurt. So the RBI is trying to instate a system to ensure that even though you're a part of the system, the only way you can build trust in it is if you're being hurt. So they're trying to come up with a comprehensive system to do that. But overall, in the report, the three things that really stood out to me were three things that the RBI is trying to do. They're trying to strengthen infrastructure. They want to have last mile delivery, and they want to overcome the rural-urban divide in certain senses. So when they're talking about strengthening infrastructure, they're talking about that there is a development of an ecosystem that requires, and this requires infrastructure, the ecosystem itself, but also the development of it. So when we're talking about a credit infrastructure, we needed to have disciplined payment infrastructure. We needed to be able to record transactions really well. We need all of these details to be present within the infrastructure when we're talking about it. And a way of doing this till now has been, you know, talking about NEFT and RTGS, but more importantly, with everyone coming under Aadhaar, you have everyone's information together. You've had a comprehensive system that can have everyone's credit history also in place where it's linked to one unique identification ID. And that's a way for them to strengthen infrastructure and saying that, listen, we now have the data available to us to be able to talk about delayed giving of loans, the delayed redressal of problems. We're now able to deal with it through a comprehensive infrastructure. The second being last mile delivery, a problem that India has often faced is that those who require these services the most, for those who these policies are made, are often the last people to get them because of inertia on the part of bureaucrats at the local level. And the RBI is trying to overcome these challenges by ensuring that most of this work can be now done online, where they're trying to show you that you don't actually need to go to a government office to get the work done for a bank. You don't really need a third person to help you out. And I think that's where their whole argument of overcoming the rural-urban divide comes in, that until now, most of the platforms that have been there for credit infrastructure have largely focused on, you know, being in English, being accessible to those who are able to have a stable internet connection, those who have access to a smartphone or a PC. And they're trying to tell you that these may be certain prerequisites, but we're also trying to make it more accessible now. Websites are now being created in regional languages. They're trying to make it a lot more user-friendly. And that's how they're trying to overcome the rural-urban divide. And this was a problem that we faced even with the pandemic when the vaccination platform was launched. For the longest time, it was merely in English. And that was a problem because it was an assumption that everyone in the country would be able to understand English or be able to operate a digital platform. And they didn't take into context, you know, the people who would actually be using it. And given the fact that a large majority of India's population lives in rural areas, it's necessary for us to take into account that these are the people who are going to be using this and these are the people we want to target. So I think those were some of the most interesting things that I came about. And I think this ties in with the solutions that we were thinking about access to credit. Would you like to talk about fintechs and how you thought they're doing a good job at this?
Yeah, I think when you look at fintechs and marketplace lending, I mean, at first glance, it looks like their lending rates are very high and much higher than what normal banks give you loans for. But you must understand that the people who take these loans are comparing it with, say, private money lenders. And this is way cheaper than that, these loans, right? So this marketplace lending has taken off the world over. It does, these fintechs are slightly outside the purview of a lot of regulation today. But I think over time, even the RBI report, I think, talks about how fintechs are here to stay, and over time, they need to be regulated too. Be that as it may, but those currently the fintechs, all of them, they rely on, how do they work? How does it work, right? So you go in, you provide some information, there's a questionnaire, you go fill in that questionnaire online, and immediately there's a credit risk assessment, which happens in the background. They also, based on the question answers that you've given, they are able to quickly check your CIBIL score and various things. And then they come back and say, hey, this is what I can lend to you. And this is what the rate of interest will be. But two things happen here. One, all most of these things are in English. And so access to a large percentage of rural India is out, right, on account of this. But if I was, while I was doing some research on startups, and as you know, I have some interests outside of this where I work with startups and help them scale. Then one of the organizations I came across was a very interesting incubator, one of the largest incubators in India, probably even the largest, that is Deshpande Startups. So what these people do is they support startups which are working in the areas which affect 1 billion Indians. Most of the goods and services that we receive in India are targeted at the 350 million Indians who have some purchasing power and probably no English and so on. But all these people, just like we discussed, also have a need and a use for many of these services, just like fintechs. Now, while I was doing this research, I came across an interesting fintech called Jai Kisan, which has been set up aimed at rural India, and it has been able to raise $30 million in VC funding. So these kind of things are happening today and as we speak, and these are for hundreds of millions of people in India who live in rural areas, don't have a credit score, and Jai Kisan is attempting to bring this financial services to rural India, where commercial banks have very low penetration. So I think things like this will make a huge difference to financial inclusion and access to credit. So when we talk about the solutions themselves, right, I think if you think back a little bit, two, three things come to my mind, and please let me know if I've missed something. One was you talked about financial literacy. So if you're able to teach people the importance of knowing your accounting, knowing how to save, knowing where to spend money, understand the difference between cash flow and profit, right? I mean, these are very important distinctions to be made. And when people learn that, they become better creditrists, right? A financially literate person is a better creditrist than one who's not. So that should by itself help people who offer credit greater confidence. So it's in their interest to ensure that people they lend to have financial literacy. The second thing which we talked about the rural-urban divide, but we didn't sort of talk about why that is so, right? It's because of internet infrastructure. I mean, we all have high-speed 4G connections on our smartphones. We're able to even watch movies. We're able to do multiple things with greater confidence. We have multiple internet connections at home. And therefore, like, you know, if one goes down, we have the other up. And we can continue to do all kinds of internet transactions. But while there is access to cell phones almost all over the country, access to reliable high-speed internet is not ubiquitous, right? So we do need to invest as a country in better internet infrastructure and help rural India get digital faster. So those are two things. Then the third one, which we talked about, I think, is one of my favorite topics, which is at-risk finance. Ensuring that entrepreneurs benefit a lot, they can borrow some money, they can afford to take some debt, but they can't always rely on debt. They need some at-risk capital. And if we can get people to come in and provide at-risk capital, you will see many more entrepreneurs in India, and especially amongst women. It'll make a dramatic difference to our landscape if that were to happen. So I would think these three things. And then, of course, fintechs will then be possible. If you have financial literacy, you have access to digital infrastructure, and you have at-risk finance. Now, fintechs can come in and do much more. That's what I think. I mean, what are your thoughts? Anything else you'd like to add on this?
I think you've covered all of the solutions that we had to offer, but just, I think, reiterate the one thing, being that almost every solution that we've offered requires people to be financially literate. And that's a policy that we've been trying, that RBI, as you said, has been trying to mandate since the 1950s, and we still haven't gotten anywhere. We say that banking has now become ubiquitous in urban areas, but even then, the urban poor barely have any access to formal institutions. So I think when we're talking about the rural-urban divide, we also need to probably do another double click and talk about the urban poor themselves, about how they have a lack of access and how unequal this access is, not just between the urban and rural areas, but also within the urban areas themselves. And how, unless we come up with policy measures that can target all of these people effectively, we might not really reap the benefits of a policy like access to credit.
Yeah. So people are saying, now that we have jam, give me bread. Yeah. So there we go. Thank you very much, Arushi. It was great talking to you about this today.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.